Like to welcome everyone to the next edition or next episode of Two Men in a Bible Fighting the Cosmic Battle. My name's Jamie Sanchez, and again I'm joined by Pastor Bob Brandon. So lucky. I'm the lucky one.
I don't know about that. I feel pretty fortunate to be in your company. Hey, let's remind our listeners why we call it Fighting the Cosmic Battle.
Great idea.
We often start out with that, and it's on the website, I think, when you click on there. But you remember Paul saying in Ephesians, our struggle is not against flesh and blood. It's against the principalities and powers and so on. And once you catch the story that God's putting down, and as always, I don't mean by story fairy tale.
Right.
I mean, it comes in narrative form. And that is the best way to communicate, by the way, is tell a story. But as he tells the story of the world, that's the essence of the conflict. And we saw that come to the forefront, hints of it in Genesis 1, where it says darkness was over the surface
right.
of the deep. But it was made explicit in Genesis 3, and that's the real battle.
And I think that's an important realization,
I want to remind our listeners of that. You know, as you listen, be aware that you're engaged in the cosmic battle every moment of your life.
And we're not talking Star Trek, right?
No, that was such a great show. Boy, was it popular in its day.
It absolutely was. And so I think that's a great point, is to remind everybody, you know, what we are talking about, and to realize, you know, has that cosmic battle, has it weakened over the years?
No, it hasn't. And that's it raises an interesting issue that we can't discuss at length, but and that's the question of does it rage and then get quiet and then rage again? You know, were there mm-hmm. periods of history where it wasn't so prominent? I don't know if I want to go that far, but you certainly could probably take at least this step. When Jesus became incarnate and took on human flesh, I mean the devil showed up personally for that.
Oh yeah.
So you know, maybe then, and perhaps at his crucifixion, mm-hmm. perhaps at his resurrection. But those are guesses. We don't have scriptural insight into that. Perhaps we do. You know, maybe as we continue to search the scriptures, we'll learn more about that. But I don't want to say there's times when it's really pacified.
But
it's there.
It doesn't stop, I guess.
That's right. It does not stop. It may intensify during certain. Well, actually, we'll see an instance today where it looked pretty intense.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And I think, you know, I know I remember in prayer every day, or I definitely try to make sure this gets into every one of my prayers, is, you know, protection from that dark side and you know.
Well, what's in the Lord's Prayer? Deliver us from evil.
Yes.
So, yeah, that needs to be in everybody's prayer. You know, as many people as have memorized that prayer, mm-hmm. I don't know why it's not real in their lives. I mean, it takes 10 seconds to say it.
Right.
And it's not like you have to parrot it back as if that's going to get you further down the road. But you need to know, when Jesus gave them instruction on prayer, those were the key elements. How could we forget? It's 10 seconds long. How could we forget that?
Right. Right. So today we're going to dive into Genesis chapter 31.
Yeah. And
story turns a
little
bit.
This is a big, long chapter.
Right.
There's lots of material here and lots of good points. So I think the best way to do it is let's read it through.
Okay.
As is our habit. Then we'll go back and pick up the details as best we can. Now, Jacob heard the words of Laban's sons, saying, Jacob has taken away all that was our father's, and from what belonged to our father, he's made all his wealth. Jacob saw the attitude of Laban, and behold, it was not friendly toward him as formerly. Then the Lord said to Jacob, return to the land of your fathers and to your relatives, and I will be with you, So Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah to his flock in the field, and he said to them, I see your father's attitude, that it's not friendly toward me as formerly, but the God of my father has been with me. You know that I've served your father with all my strength, yet your father has cheated me, changed my wages 10 times. However, God did not allow him to hurt me. If he spoke thus, the speckled shall be your wages. Then all the flock brought forth speckled. And if he spoke thus, the striped shall be your wages. Then all the flock brought forth striped. Thus God has taken away your father's livestock and given them to me. And it came about at the time when the flock were mating that I lifted up my eyes and saw in a dream, and behold, the male goats which were mating were striped and speckled and mottled. Then the angel of God said to me in the dream, Jacob. I said, Here I am. He said, Lift up now your eyes and see that all the male goats which were mating are striped, speckled, and mottled. For I have seen all that Laban's been doing to you. I am the God of Bethel, where you anointed a pillar, where you made a vow to me. Now arise, leave this land, and return to the land of your birth. Rachel and Leah answered and said to him, Do we still have any portion or inheritance in our father's house? Are we not reckoned by him as foreigners? For he has sold us, and he has also entirely consumed our purchase price. Surely all the wealth which God has taken away from our father belongs to us and our children. Now then, do whatever God has said to you. Then Jacob arose and put his children and his wives upon camels, and he drove away all his livestock and all his property which he had gathered, his acquired livestock which he had gathered in Paddan Aram, to go to the land of Canaan to his father Isaac. When Laban had gone to shear his flock, then Rachel stole the household idols that were her father's. And Jacob deceived Laban, the Aramean, by not telling him that he was fleeing. So he fled with all that he had, and he arose across the Euphrates River and set his face toward the hill country of Gilead. When it was told Laban on the third day that Jacob had fled, then he took his kinsmen with him and pursued him a distance of 7 days' journey, and he overtook him in the hill country of Gilead. God came to Laban, the Aramean, in a dream of the night and said, Be careful that you do not speak to Jacob, either good or bad. And Laban caught up with Jacob. Now Jacob had pitched his tent in the hill country, and Laban with his kinsmen camped in the hill country of Gilead. Then Laban said to Jacob, What have you done by deceiving me and carrying away my daughters like captives of the sword? Why did you flee secretly and deceive me and did not tell me so that I might have sent you away with joy and with songs and with timbrel and with lyre? And he did not allow me to kiss my sons and my daughters. Now you've done foolishly. It's in my power to do you harm. But the God of your father spoke to me last night, saying, Be careful not to speak either good or bad to Jacob. Now you've indeed gone away because you long greatly for your father's house. But why did you steal my gods? Then Jacob answered and said to Laban, Because I was afraid, for I thought that you would take your daughters from me by force. The one with whom you find your gods shall not live. In the presence of your kinsmen, point out what's yours among my belongings and take it for yourself. For Jacob did not know that Rachel had stolen them. So Laban went into Jacob's tent, and into Leah's tent, and into the tent of the two maids, but he did not find them. Then he went out of Leah's tent, and entered Rachel's tent. Now Rachel had taken the household idols, and put them in the camel's saddle. She sat on them. Laban felt through all the tent, but did not find them. She said to her father, Let my lord not be angry. Let not my lord be angry that I cannot rise before you. For the manner of women is upon me. So he searched, but did not find the household idols. Then Jacob became angry and contended with Laban. And Jacob answered and said to Laban, What's my transgression? What's my sin that you've hotly pursued me? Though you fell through all my goods, what have you found of all your household goods? Set it here before my kinsmen and your kinsmen, that they may decide between us two. These 20 years I've been with you, your ewes, your female goats have not miscarried, nor have I eaten the rams of your flocks. That which was torn of beasts I did not bring to you. I bore the loss of it myself. You required it in my hand, whether stolen by day or stolen by night. Thus I was, by day the heat consumed me, and the frost by night. My sheep fled from my eyes. These 20 years I've been in your house. I served you 14 years for your two daughters, and 6 years for your flock, and you changed my wages 10 times. If the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac had not been for me, surely now you would have sent me away empty-handed. God has seen my affliction and the toil of my hands, so he rendered judgment last night. Then Laban answered and said to Jacob, the daughters are my daughters, and the children are my children, and the flocks are my flocks, and all that you see is mine. But what can I do this day to these my daughters, or to their children whom they have borne? So come now, let us make a covenant, you and I. Let it be a witness between you and me. Then Jacob took a stone and set it up as a pillar. Jacob said to his kinsmen, gather stones. So they took stones and made a heap, and they ate there by the heap. Now Laban called it Jegar Sahadutha, but Jacob called it Galeed. Laban said, this heap is a witness between you and me this day. Therefore it was named Galeed. And Mizpah, for he said, may the Lord watch between you and me when we're absent one from another. If you mistreat my daughters, or if you take wives besides my daughters, although no man is with us, see, God is witness between you and me. Laban said to Jacob, behold this heap, and behold the pillar which I have set between you and me. This heap is a witness, and the pillar is a witness, that I will not pass by this heap to you for harm. You will not pass by this heap or this pillar to me for harm. The God of Abraham and the God of Nahor, the God of their father, judge between us. So Jacob swore by the fear of his father Isaac. Then Jacob offered a sacrifice on the mountain, called his kinsmen to the meal, and they ate the meal and spent the night on the mountain. Early in the morning Laban arose and kissed his sons and his daughters and blessed them. Then Laban departed and returned to his place. Hey, how about some... How'd I do on this pronunciation of those? Jagar, Sahadutha thing?
I didn't want to break your stride or else I'd have given you the golf clap right in the middle. So, Jacob has an interesting journey that we get to be privy to. And something as I was reading and preparing for tonight, sometimes when I read these things, and I think you and I have had conversations like this before, it's hard to understand and take it literally. And so, again, this is something that needs to be taken normally. And this is what happened. You know, because it almost, I guess, in our culture, it could feel, you know, you're reading about the goats and everything like that. And Do you know what I mean? So it had
fairy tale elements to it.
Right.
Like you're reading it going, oh, come on, that's...
And so I think it's important to remind ourselves.
But now it clears that up.
It sure does.
Here's what was really going on.
Mm-hmm. With the poles and why that was what
that's
was...
That's right. You know what's another observation, Jamie, on the text is it's so much like life. Like, when you're in the moment, you can't really understand the significance of the moment or have the perhaps the proper perspective because events are right in front of your face.
Mm-hmm.
But as time goes by, then you look back and go, oh, that's what was going on there. And that seems like Moses is writing the story with suspense that way because everybody would have that question, like, yeah, how's he manipulating this with the poles and the rods? And God showed him
right
that.
I think it goes back to, you know, what you always say, you know, the difference between believing God and believing in God is life and death. And this is one of those believing God moments.
Yeah.
Where we just have to understand that this is what happened. This is what went down. Otherwise, it wouldn't be in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And
Well, that's exactly right. And it's just, wow, when Jacob begins to tell his wives, you know, here's what's going on. Your dad's ripping me off, but God is for me.
Right.
And he's referring constantly in Jacob's mind. And you see it comes up in the next two chapters very clearly. But constantly in his mind, as you can imagine it would be, is that scene a couple chapters ago where God appeared to him at Bethel.
Right.
And he sets up a pillar and God says, I'm with you. Right?
Right.
And so Jacob's interpreting that with me as my defender, my provider, and he's right.
Mm-hmm.
He's interpreting that word with me as my shield, my power, and all that. And he's right. And that's what's been going on in this whole story is, like we mentioned on a previous podcast, but God's accomplishing his will.
Right.
And Jacob's is the guy that he's using, but it's all going to work out. Even though, you know, he got ripped off with his first bride and all that, he's building the house of Israel.
As things unfold, as you pointed out in one of our most recent podcasts, it is an unfolding.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, in looking at my life, I could see that process happening in my life as well. And I think our listeners, you know, would concur on that as well. That is, you sometimes, we always know hindsight's 20/20, not even sometimes.
Yep.
But as it unfolds, I think we start to see the importance of certain events in our lives, you know, and how they do become more significant, more important. You know, we have Jacob here, God's talking to him directly again.
Showing him in a dream. And by the way, it's the deck is loaded, so to speak. If Laban says, I want all the spotted ones, they're coming out pure.
Right.
If he says, I want all the pure ones, they're coming out. It doesn't matter.
Right.
What Laban says, God's going to trump him the other way.
Goes back to God's will, right? Am I?
That's right.
Now, I have a question. Verse 11, chapter 31, verse 11. Then the angel of the Lord of God said to me in a dream, and Jacob said, here I am. So I get the goat part here. But then in verse 13, when this angel of God then says, I am the God of Bethel.
Well, they use the phrase angel of the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
Typically to mean the Lord. But they say angel because they want it one step removed. You know, it's so scary for them to be face-to-face with the Lord that they'll describe that as his angel, even though he speaks in the first person for God. And you'll see that a handful of times in the Old Testament. Samson's parents have an occurrence like that, and they're like, the angel of God spoke to me. But then as they describe it, they're going, God said...
Right.
You know, as if it's him. Abraham's seen with Abraham, same way. So that's how they refer to God. They mean God, they just want a little separation there. Because they have a healthy fear of him.
Well, and I thought it was interesting the way that God actually identifies himself. I am the God. You know, just so you know, I was there
same
with
guy that showed up to you at Bethel. That's me. Mm-hmm. Here I am. And Jacob's response, you know, here I am, Lord, is a standard response. You'll see the same thing in Samuel. excuse me, the prophets often respond that way. Here I am. It's formulaic for, I'm your servant. I got you. I'm listening. You know, what do I need to know?
And any echoes at all to early Genesis to where the Lord asked Adam, where are you? Here I am.
That's interesting. I never thought of it that way, so I can't really answer that. I would guess no, but there might be something there. I would just have to hold that in my hand for a while to think about that.
So
the reason I would pause
right.
over that is it is formulaic.
Right.
You see that over and over. That's
and it just may be
response.
The... Right. And Rebecca or Rachel and Leah, they understand, you know, they get...
They're in a new family. It's part of marriage. leaving Cleve.
Right.
So they're in Jacob's household, and they're like, yeah, you know, Laban's, he consumed our bridal price. You know, what's going on there culturally is typically in a perfectly functioning way, that bridal price was set aside. Like, you know, as a groom, you're paying, excuse me, for your bride, and the bride's father or who's ever acting in that place sets it, you know, puts that in the bank, so to speak. Say the husband abandons her.
Right.
Okay, here's your, hey, I don't want you to be destitute. You know, here's the lump sum the guy gave me. You know, this is yours and so on. But Laban spent all that. So anyway, Laban spent all that.
Right.
So, you know, Leah and Rachel don't have a whole lot of comfort in Laban. He's not really their protector. He's out for himself. And they see that. You know, Jacob's the one who's providing for him.
And they're with him, but yet Rachel...
I knew you were going to ask that. Everybody asks that. I ask it, too.
What's up with the idols?
Well, for one, that's a very... Everyone would have that. Every household in that day and age has household idols. And that continues for centuries. Caesar had that. The Romans were full of that. You've maybe even been in houses like that today,
mm-hmm.
where they might have. I certainly have seen that overseas. But in their day, everybody had that. So, in Rachel's case, they're very small. They can be large, because in Rachel's case, she puts them on the donkey, like on the saddle, you know, and can sit on them. But when you get to like 1 Samuel, Michael, Saul's daughter, has one large enough that it looks like David's body as she puts it in the bed to fake everybody
right.
out. Like, that's David's sick. He's over there. So they can be of varying sizes. Apparently these are small. But it's just the idolatry that was rampant in the ancient Near East. I mean, everybody had that. And so there's no explanation for what she's doing. You know, the reader's left to you know, assume what's going on. But here's what I think is going on. I couldn't defend this tooth or nail, but I'd have to be pretty strongly convinced otherwise.
Right.
This is one of those references. Remember who Moses is writing to.
Mm-hmm.
Israel, as they're coming out of Egypt. Did Egypt have household idols? Oh, you bet they did. So, are the Israelites, you know, there's roughly a million people with Moses
mm-hmm.
as he's coming out of Egypt. He doesn't know all of them. You couldn't humanly know them.
Right.
Does he suspect some of them have these idols with them? Oh, yeah. And they do. As you read Deuteronomy, you know, God's going, you need to purify your thing. And later on in Genesis, you'll see Jacob saying, hey, everybody who's got that in my household needs to get rid of it. So it's a common thing. So the reader at this point is looking at that going, that's not good. But that's all. This is not the time where Moses is really going to go into that.
Not hammering the point.
He's got a different point now. You can tell because he doesn't elaborate it, but you know, not good. The original hearers would be going, that's not good.
Oh, this,
like, they could get, like, Jacob could get in trouble for that. He had nothing to do with it. Jacob, the leader's not into household idols. Neither is Moses as they're coming out of Egypt. But does someone in Jacob's camp have that? Yes. Does someone in Moses' camp have that? Yes. You know, not a good idea.
Right.
So that's what's going on. It's subtle, but I think that's the point.
And Rachel almost paid a heavy price for that.
I mean, if she gets caught with that, yeah, Jacob said. You can kill the guy that you
mm-hmm.
find that with. That's strong. Strong statement. So you could see everybody that Moses is talking to in Israel going, maybe I ought to get rid of my household idol.
Yeah. Now, Laban grew up in a house that was faithful to God, right?
Not necessarily.
No,
he's got the household idols. He's beyond the Euphrates. You know, he's from the general family of Abraham, of course. But no, they're not. He's Aramean. He's not. No.
But not Canaanite.
Not Canaanite. He's not of that stock. That's right. That's a great distinction. The Bible makes that distinction. But no, he's not. He's not a believer.
And speak good or bad, you know. When I read that, I was like, well, what's he gonna say? You know, what is that warning? What is that?
Here's what I wanted to quiz you on.
Uh-oh.
As a reader.
What's that?
But I'm going to give you, you know, you got wood on the ball. Here came the pitch, and you made contact on that. That's direct speech from God.
Right.
So anytime you see in a given context, like this chapter, direct speech from God, that's really important. You remember, again, hearkening back to the cosmic battle and going back to Genesis chapter 3, the tree that has the knowledge of good and evil. Okay, that's the word. This says good and bad. You know, it's translated in English as bad. It's the word evil. So don't speak good or evil to Jacob. In other words, I think it's a little bit subtle. I only say a little bit, rather than very subtle, in that God spoke it. So any reader, you know, one of the things we want to convey to our listeners is how to read the scripture. So when God speaks directly, that's everything's going to revolve around that. So when he says don't speak good or evil to Jacob, it's like a power that God is reserving for himself. Like Jacob or Laban, you don't have the power of good and evil over my servant Jacob. So you just mellow out a little bit.
Right.
I have that power over good and evil. So don't mess with my guy. That's what he's telling. And that's the theme of the whole chapter and the whole episode, even in the next two chapters as
right.
we get into them. Don't mess with my guy. I know you have your human arguments. And by the way, they're all wrong. You know, Laban's not has
right.
not been a good guy.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So all his are, you know, when he says, look, this is all mine, all these daughters and all. No, it's not.
Not even close.
No, those are Jacob's. That's his wives. You gave them away as deceptively as you did, but you gave them away in marriage. That's Jacob's now.
And he
is. And that flock is Jacob's
yeah.
flock.
Yeah.
He worked for you. You're going to pay him nothing. Remember Jacob going, look, if I lost a lamb, which you can imagine, everybody's going to lose a lamb now and then.
Right.
You know, Jacob's going, I paid for that myself. I bore the loss of that. I didn't count it on your account, which would be the normal thing. Hey, everybody loses a lamb now and then. You know, there's lions
right.
out there. There's predators. But Jacob's going, I was way above board in dealing with you. You changed my wages ten times. Laban doesn't say, you know, no, I didn't. So Laban's not really a good guy.
Right. Right.
He's not telling the truth in this situation, but he's got human arguments. And, you know, it's really a point I wanted to belabor just a little bit, because as we go through the cosmic battle, as we go through life, we all have our human arguments.
Mm-hmm.
Every person I've ever heard, you know, in every counseling situation or just life situation, you know, every neighbor, they were in the right. You know,
mm-hmm.
they've got their story and they got
right.
ripped off.
Right.
I understand.
Right.
Some of those are closer to the truth than others. I understand. But everybody's got a human story. But there's a spiritual battle going on. God just says, literally trumps him, right? Don't say good or evil to my servant Jacob. Just back off on all this human argument stuff. It's almost as if there's a cosmic courtroom, which, by the way, there is. And, you know, we'll see how far those human arguments get up here. You know, God knows the heart of every individual. He knows the way stuff is really good. He knows, right? He says, I've seen the way Laban's treating you.
Right.
I've seen that.
Right.
So he knows everything. So it doesn't, even though Jacob defends himself and gives a great speech, and Jacob's probably right in the whole deal.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't matter. God's trumping the whole thing. God's for him. You can have all the human arguments you want, and you're going to lose a lot of times in the human court. But in God's courtroom, you don't lose when you're his servant.
Well, Laban, he agreed to this as I read it. You know, as a reader, I'm thinking, well, you know, what are, and I like how he said, now I have the ability to do you harm, but you're God, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, there's still so much pride in him.
Yeah, he's got a little cocky. He's a little cocky. Am I the right picture of Laban?
Yes. Yeah, very much so. So he's motivated by pride.
Right.
And what tipped it all off, which has never changed down through the ages, is the way the chapter began. They're jealous mm-hmm. of Jacob.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, flocks and herds, you know, goats and sheep, that's the equivalent today of money.
Right.
Hey, Jacob's rich. We're jealous of that.
Yeah, he got rich off of us.
He made his money up. You know, it's like, oh, gosh. Here's the ultimate human sin, you know, mm-hmm. the jealousy, the pride of someone else's wealth.
And we've
it
been
just sort of turns your stomach, sort of.
And that jealousy has reared its ugly head several times over the past few episodes.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
and you
you're
be,
really seeing it at work
it
in there.
It really is, and I want to be clear. I'm sorry I'm interrupting
oh, no.
you, but the, you know, as we begin our podcast, reminding our listeners of the cosmic battle, those human emotions in the sin of jealousy and so on are very easily manipulated
mm-hmm.
in the spiritual realm.
Mm-hmm.
So when you see that in your life, when you notice it, you know, hidden in your heart and motivating you, you know, towards
right.
that, just get rid of that. That is a tool that the demonic world uses ad infinitum. It's such an easy tool for them.
Now, ad infinitum, you
yeah,
got
forever.
Okay.
You know, they
yeah.
use it. It's like they're one of their biggest weapons, you know, because we're fallen, and so we harbor these prideful thoughts. But jealousy is just such a destructive force. And
yes,
so here's God trumping that, you know, going, hey, Laban. And it was one sentence to him. You know, to Jacob, he'll have a conversation. To Laban, it's essentially back off.
Yep.
I control good and evil, not you.
And don't even go there.
Yeah.
Now, is there any significance, Bob, to why in verse 42, if the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac?
Yeah.
Is that all the same? Or?
That's all the same. He's renamed the same thing three times. And so you get the expounding of what that name means. You know, that's a way they would refer to God, the fear of Isaac. That's a good, very good way to say it. We don't say that today.
Well,
you know, Jesus is our friend.
Right.
You know, which I understand.
Right, right,
I don't want to belittle it. I just want to say be careful with that doesn't obscure just exactly who God is, you know, someone to fear, particularly his servants
right.
fear him. Not fear like, oh my God, Nimrod, but fear like, man, you better obey this guy.
Well, and I think that's an important thing then for us to take away from this. And I think, you know, as conversations I've had throughout the years, you know, it's hard for, you know, the Western Christian or
yep.
Western
yep.
religious person.
Yep.
That fear stuff they don't like. They don't
know.
You know,
it's God's. They like Santa Claus.
Right.
I like that guy.
Yeah.
The guy that's got a big bag full of presents for
right.
me. God is. You know those t-shirts you see to continue with Western culture that say no fear?
Mm-hmm.
Every time I see one of those on a high school kid, I just grip my teeth.
Right.
I almost want to hit the brakes and stop and get out of the car and go, come here. Let me tell you, there is somebody you should fear.
Right.
It's like the Tom Petty song. You know, he encapsulates all that. I'll just never quit being a closet fan of rock and roll. Not in a worship way, but I like that kind of music. But, you know, Petty saying, you can stand me up at the gates of hell, but I won't back down. And I always want to say, you know, as I listen to that song when it comes on, like the oldies, I always go, yes, you will.
Oh, in a second.
Yes, you will.
In a second.
You have no idea what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, God, but the point is, before we get off track, God is someone to be feared. He holds the power of life and death. He can condemn someone to hell. He's much more to be feared than the devil.
Right.
Devil might destroy your body. God can destroy your soul. I mean, he's to be feared. But he doesn't wield his wrath in a uncontrolled way. I mean, if he's angry at you, it's for a reason.
Right.
If he condemns you to hell, it's for a reason. But he's the ultimate authority, so he's necessarily the ultimate one to fear. And that's crucial. I don't see how you could make any spiritual progress in your life if you don't fear God. That's impossible.
It's impossible. I totally agree. And I think we see the exact flip side of that coin in this chapter of his blessings as well. If God is blessing you, he is blessing you.
He told Jacob, I'm with you. Oh, man, that's what you want. You know, there was a time once when I was watching a baseball game as a young boy, and I'm sure the Indians were losing because we were cellar dwellers for my entire childhood. I mean, until I was an adult, we didn't win anything. But so we're watching this game, the guy gets a hit. But it's a cheat, you know, it's like he barely got his bat on it, and it wiggles its way through the infield. Like three different guys dive for it, but it eludes their grasp and trickles out to the outfield. And I said, you know, man, that was a cheap hit. And my dad goes, well, I'd rather be lucky than good. And, you know, it's a little modern-day proverb, mm-hmm. but there's a lot of wisdom in that.
Sure.
And to apply that biblically, you want God to favor you. You know, you don't want to be this giant with all this skill and talent and so on, and you're going to make your way in the world. You want God to favor you. You know, you want him to be with you. That's how everything happens in your favor. You know what I mean? You can get those singles all day long when God's with you.
Yep. I know exactly what you mean.
So Jacob, in a sense, can't miss. And it doesn't mean he's passive about it. He's out there shepherding the flock, and so on, as Izzy gave his story. But when God's with you, you're undefeatable. That's what you want.
And in order to have God with you, you have to build that relationship. Am I on the right page?
You fear him. You know,
right.
You gotta. As we said out of Amos the other day in church, do two men walk together without an agreement? No.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the agreement? That you want to walk with God. What is the fundamental agreement? You acknowledge his authority over your life. You submit to him and believe him.
Right.
Then he's with you.
Right.
Then you're invincible.
Right.
And you may lose your house like Job did. Lose your thing, right? But God's with you. He's going to vindicate you in the end. Job gets everything back double. It's all perfect in the end. That's what you want. We're playing for the scoreboard at the end of the game. We're not trying to win the first quarter or the half. We're trying to win at the end of the game. And the way to do that is you submit to God's authority completely. And what that looks like, to put shoe leather on that, it looks like believing him no matter what. And you win.
What were you saying this Sunday at church, Bob? The progression.
In the Gospel of John, you know, the way he portrays that movement of the spiritual life, you know, as one journeys with God, it is really a walk that begins with belief, but it moves to knowing and eventuates, that is, finally bears fruit in loving. To move from believing to knowing to loving is real discipleship.
Well, and I think we're seeing that as, you know, being displayed here as we see it unfold for Jacob.
Yeah, you know, in a rudimentary form.
Yes.
You know, the New Testament will clarify, but Jacob's learning. He believes God at Bethel.
Right.
After the next three chapters, he knows.
Right.
And hopefully in his life later on, he loved.
Right.
But that's right.
And I guess we're saying aloha to Laban because he doesn't come up anymore.
He doesn't show. He's out. You know, he's a pawn that served his purpose.
Right.
That's right. So here's the main stuff as I see it in this chapter. It's really kind of 3 points. One, we really stress God holds the power of good and evil. You know, Laban, back off. You don't have power over my servant Jacob. So the immediate application. Remember the original readers of this. Who would they be? Jacob, Laban. Who would they replace those two names with?
Moses and Pharaoh.
That's exactly right. Or Israel, and you're right, mm-hmm. Us. We're Jacob. We're
right.
God's people. And Laban's Pharaoh. And that's right. Pharaoh doesn't have the power for good and evil over God's servants.
Even though he tries hard.
No, he thinks he does. He's going to fight it, you know, to the death of his firstborn son. He's going to fight it to his own death in the middle of the Red Sea when God causes the sea to fold in on him. But so today, now let's take one more step. So originally you have Jacob and Laban. Then the original readers, you have Israel and Pharaoh. Now Jamie Sanchez and the world. Like, the world has no power over you for good or evil. God does.
Well, and I think that's an important, very important part, point, Bob, that you've helped me to realize. Is that, you know, and I think that's important for the listener to really, you know, understand, as you've shown me, that it says it here, and if this is the truth, then that's the truth. And it does say it here, you know. And
yes, it does.
And
the point is, okay, God, you know, speaking to Laban in the dream, don't mess with my guy. Yeah. And, you know, to play it out a little further, Laban had all his human arguments. Mm-hmm. Jacob had all his human arguments. That's fine. God said, don't mess with my guy. That's what you want. And Jacob was more in the right. You know, you're
right.
Reading the story, you go, yeah, hey, Jacob was right here.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very, because the other 2 points of this chapter, the main emphasis is human obedience. Jacob's really portrayed as very faithful here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I understand the deception with the birthright and all that, but he's done nothing but serve, really.
Right.
God's been for him. He bore the cost of all that stuff himself, you know. So human obedience is crucial. Just as you really can't make any steps spiritually, can't make any progress without acknowledging God as your Lord, as your ultimate sovereign, neither can you really make fast progress if you're not obeying.
Right.
You gotta obey God. Let's, you know, let's
mm-hmm.
paint it black and white. You gotta obey. Very important. I understand you're going to get ripped off here and there, and
right.
You know, things aren't always going to go your way. That's a fallen world. Okay, but that doesn't mean God's not your defender and provider and judge.
He's abandoned
obey.
You.
The other side of human obedience is God's divine protection. And he shows himself strong here. Hey, Laban, back off. And in next chapter, he's going to get even bigger.
Things pick up speed.
Yeah, God's going to get even big, you know. Hey, I'm God. I control all this stuff. You don't need to fear. This Jacob, the confrontation with Laban's nothing like the confrontation with Esau.
Mm-hmm.
As far as
right.
what could happen to
right.
to Jacob. Like, with Laban, it's going to be an argument, and it's going to be bitter, you know? Mm. You have to pick up the pieces, but Laban's probably not going to kill you.
Right.
Esau said, the last thing you heard from Esau was he's going to kill you.
Well, and we're gonna read about that in the next podcast.
So, keep your dial tuned to this channel. That's anything else, Jamie, on this one?
How'd I do, Bob?
There's infinite questions on all of this stuff. And I'm going to give you, you got wood on the ball. So you have progressed from like, you're not hitting ninth in the order. you're moving towards the heart of the order.
I'm in front of the pitcher now?
You're getting closer to number four.
Nice.
Let's say a prayer. Lord, we thank you for your never-ending faithfulness. Just look how you performed on behalf of your servant, Jacob. Consider us as your servants. Perform as our Father, our protector, our guider, our shield, our provider. Act in all those ways on our behalf. For we fear you in the right way. In Jesus' name.